Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, good morning to you. We're going to waste no time this morning on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I really wanted to get Paul Hamilton on, and he's a little bit pressed for time for his own schedule today, and I said, it doesn't matter. I need Paul. I need my fix of Paul Hamilton today. So we're going to go right to the Wester Hotline here this morning in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Thanks for being with me. Paul Hamilton joins me right now to talk about some of this Sabre smoke that's been going on. Good morning to you, Paul. Thanks a lot for doing this a little bit earlier than normal.
Oh, no problem. How you been?
Pretty good, pretty good. All right, so hope you had a good vacation, by the way. I know you were away last week. We missed talking to you, but glad you could do this today. All right. Let's start with Alex Tuck, and then I'll get to Paterka and some other items. The guys this morning were talking about a podcast apparently in Vancouver where they were indicating that maybe, you know, is this a guy that the Canucks could go trade for because he seems like he might want to have a restart or fresh start somewhere else. You go back to the comments on Locker Cleanout Day where you can kind of fill us in a little bit more. Where do you think things stand with the Sabres from their standpoint, and Alex Tuck from his standpoint, a guy who is eligible to sign a contract extension July 1st, has 1 year remaining on his deal?
Well, he was pretty non-committal, you know, on locker cleanout day. You know, he's sitting there, well, I haven't had a chance to sit down and talk to my wife about it and everything, and I'm thinking, really? I mean, the season's been over for a couple of days. This is going to be the contract of your life, and no talk at all about it? You haven't chatted about it? I mean, okay. So it wasn't like, no, I don't want to, or yes, I will, or now the Sabres, Kevin Adams said it's a top priority for the Sabres. Once July 1st rolls around, when negotiations can start, he said it's a top priority for the Buffalo Sabres to, you know, get him re-signed and back here. Now the question is, does he want to be re-signed? How does he feel about it? As I said, he was very non-committal, which maybe tells us a lot right there. I mean, he loves the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, he grew up a Buffalo Sabres fan growing up just outside of Syracuse, came to a lot of games. I mean, when he was traded to Buffalo, he couldn't have been happier that he was going to be a Buffalo Sabre. Well, I didn't sense a guy who couldn't be happier when he was talking on Locker Cleanout Day. And so you wonder, you know, what is he thinking here? Does he want to get out? Does just bring in a guy like Kukalainen? Here's a guy who's been a general manager in the NHL for over 10 years. I mean, does Alex Tuck look at that and say, okay, I like that? You know, I like that. You know, that he's going to be in the organization helping to make decisions. A guy who, you know, throughout his career as a general manager has been very aggressive in what he's done. So he might like that option. He might say, well, you know what? I still have 1 year left on my contract. Let's play it out and see what happens. You know, maybe he's willing to give it one more year to see, you know, are the Sabres really improving? Are they on the right track? Or is this hopeless type of a thing? So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if he's willing to negotiate, willing to go, you know, all right, what are you offering? You know, what can we get in a long-term contract? Or is he wait and see more? Or has he had enough? And, I mean, it seems like maybe possibly we're getting there, and we seem to be get there. Every 3 to 5 years, we seem to get there since this drought started, that the players, they get young players. Some of them are very good. In this case, they rushed a lot of their young players. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know what, this losing is just horrible. We want out of here. Are we back into that mode of the 14-year rebuild again, where, you know, Paterka, now, you know, Paterka, what's his problem? Is it a Lindy Ruff problem, which I think it possibly could be. You know, Bo Byram, I think, is a little bit different. He's in a situation where he wants to be a top defenseman on a team. He knows with the Buffalo Sabres, with Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power here, that's not going to happen. He's not going to get power play time. But still, those are three guys that maybe, possibly, want out of here. All right, let's say that happens. Well, I know what Rasmus Dahlin, and I believe Rasmus Dahlin, but he said that he doesn't want, you know, he wants to be part of the solution here. He hasn't asked to be moved. He doesn't want to be moved. He wants to be part of this. Well, if three top guys like that get moved, what do Tage Thompson and Rasmus Dahlin say? You know, where are they at, though, now? Are they like, all right, you know what, this isn't going to work out if we lost those three guys. So it's, you know, are we at that crossroads again, where we've been many times before, or where this team has been many times before? I mean, they've remade this team how many times in 14 years? They've had numerous GMs, numerous coaches, and it just none of it seems to work.
Is this maybe part of the reason why a guy like Eric Staal would be brought in to kind of be a liaison, talk to players who, you know, he's been through a lot in his NHL career. He could kind of be a guy, a bit of a go-between to kind of, you know, talk to them. I don't know. I'm just envisioning how these conversations go. You have Jarmo, who comes in, obviously, to help out Kevin Adams. But also, is this the type of role that Eric Staal could be somebody who could really kind of relate and help out here?
Absolutely, I think it is. You know, when Kevin Adams was talking at locker cleanout day, he talked about, you know, he's got work to do to, you know, convince these players that they're on the right, you're on the right track, and they're mm-hmm. going to be successful here in Buffalo. Well, you know, J.J. Paterka would be number one in line that he has to convince. It seems like with what Elliot Friedman said so far, after 2 months of an off season, J.J. Paterka doesn't seem convinced. You know, whatever he may have heard. Is Alex Tuch convinced? You know, I don't know. He hasn't said. All he said is he hadn't talked to his wife about, you know, the biggest contract of his life. So, you know, he has to convince these players that now bringing in a guy like Staal or Jarmo, you know, you bring in those guys, does that maybe show some of the players, all right, we are changing some of the philosophies we have here. You know, we're headed in the right direction now. You know, we like these types of moves. That's not just one guy who never had the job before. He was hired by the Sabres making the decisions. And, you know, does that help in a player's mind? You know, how even, you know, I'll go back to, and I said this back then, you know, when the players and fans were at odds with each other, where, you know, the players were extremely upset that all they do is get booed every night in here. And I'm not saying whether it was right or wrong or anything. You know, fans can do what they want, and I'm not criticizing it at all. I'm just bringing it up because I know it bothered the players a lot. And they, I remember Jeremy White used the term, the Sabres, the players basically declared war on their fans. And, I said it then, and I still wonder, do the players get over that, with the fans, when they really get upset with the fans like that and don't even feel like it's their home rink anymore? Can they get over that? And I don't have an answer for you. I don't know. I don't know if that plays into any of this when a player is wondering if maybe this isn't the place for them to be anymore.
Well, winning fixes a lot of this. We know that. In a guy like J.J. Paterka's case, we've all heard the same things, which is J.J., he's not happy in Buffalo. He wants to be in a bigger city. He's a big city kind of guy. Well, guess what? You're not happy when you're losing as well. You start winning, that changes a lot of things, right? And in his case, Paul, which is different than Alex Tuch, he kind of has no leverage here, really, to me. You tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, the Sabres can say, like, look, this is we're qualifying you, and really that's where it goes. And then, sure, you have a process after that to sign him, but it's not like he can just walk. In Alex Tuch's case, he can say, look, I'm not re-signing with you. And then the Sabres are put in a position where they can keep him, see where things go, trade deadline, or they can just say, okay, that's fine. We're going to, ship you off. He's in a different spot, J.J. Paterka.
Well, Kevin Adams has been very clear about this since he got the job, that he doesn't want players on this team that don't want to be in Buffalo. And he's said that from day one, and he's never shied away from that. He's always, stayed with that. And so if a player just doesn't want to be around, J.J. Paterka being in a big city, I'm not buying it. If you really, really press me, my guess is it's Lindy Ruff, that he just does not like playing for Lindy Ruff. I had heard as the season went on, especially near the end, that some players weren't real enthralled with Lindy Ruff. And, you might say, well, why? Well, part of it is, Lindy Ruff is not afraid to stand there at the podium and criticize a player. Players don't like that when their coach, throws them under the bus in front of media and that type of thing. And, J.J. Paterka, just look at his analytic numbers. They are not good at all. And that doesn't help him when people start talking about offer sheets and everything. All that kind of goes into there. There are people who feel the same, even though he scored 55 goals in the last 2 years, that because of how bad he is analytically, that the Sabres would be a better team without him on their team. Analytically, he doesn't. And if you watched him play last year, I thought he did improve his defensive play. I still think he has a long ways to go, and the numbers would prove that. But I thought, watching him, I thought he worked a little bit harder to get back into the zone and try to pay attention to it. And, maybe that's the rub. I mean, maybe he, Lindy Ruff sometimes doesn't coddle people when he's trying to get his point across. And if, J.J. Paterka, in his mind, wasn't holding up his end of the bargain defensively, it might have got pretty squirrely in that room between the two of them. And, J.J. Paterka addressed this, that he needs to watch his body language and be better.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the joy when he was a younger player in here, when he would score a goal?
Yeah.
He was like a kid. It seemed like last year, anytime he scored a goal, that joy wasn't there. He wasn't smiling. He wasn't, celebrating the goal. He would celebrate with his teammates as they got into that pack, but there wasn't a smile on his face or anything. When you talked to him in the locker room, you're always willing to talk, but he always had a frown on his face. It was never kidding around at all or anything like that. It was like, all right, you want to do an interview? Let's do an interview. When it's over, there was always a pout on his face, and he just didn't seem like a happy camper. So, that's, if you made me guess, that would be my guess, that his problem basically is with Lindy Ruff, and that would be something that would have to be straightened out.
Paul Hamilton here on the Wester Hotline. His reports on WGR brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. All right, well, you got Paterka. You got Tuch, and of course, Bo Byram, who, as I agree with you, you just said a little while ago, completely different type of scenario. This is maybe a player who that doesn't necessarily hate being a Buffalo, but his circumstance, he might want a little bit more. What do you think they could get on the market for a guy like Bo Byram?
And you never, Bo Byram is the exact opposite. You never saw him moping around right. in the room. He was kidding around with guys. He was, you know, you talk to him, he seemed fine with being here in Buffalo. He seemed to like Buffalo. Never had a bad thing to say about the city or the teammates or anything like that. I just think simply he looks at it that, you know, he wants to be a guy on a power play. Well, here in Buffalo, he's not going to be on the power play unless there's an injury. That's going to be for many years to come. That's going to be Darlene's job and Power's job. You know, he wants to be the number one guy that goes out there in a big situation. That's going to be Rasmus Dahlin's job. Now, I don't know if Bo Byram would be okay with this because, again, he wouldn't be on the power play. But if you look at Bo Byram, he played extremely well when he was out there with Rasmus Dahlin. That was a fantastic pair. And then he didn't play as well at all with any of the other defensemen. I have no problem of signing Bo Byram and saying he's Rasmus Dahlin's partner. Why, you know, my thought is, why can't you do that? Now, maybe Bo Byram, since he's still not going to be on the power play, even though he would be on number one pair with Rasmus Dahlin, maybe that's not enough for him. I don't know. But I would have zero problem with re-signing him and just saying, just like I think they need to find a partner for Owen Power, and if Ekblad, you know, does wind up not coming to a deal with Florida, I think he would be perfect. And I think Byron would be a perfect partner for Dahlin. Dahlin doesn't mind playing the right side. You don't need a lefty-righty when it comes to the two of them. So, you know, again, that would be something I think I'd be fine with. It's like, all right, you just signed in to be Dahlin's partner, and I had zero problem with that at all. The question is, does Bo Byram still have a problem even with that?
Paul, the Sabres have to make some decisions on how they want to approach their restricted free agents. We just talked a little bit about, obviously, J.J. Paterka's situation. We know what that is. You also have Jack Quinn. Never really recovered quite fully from the Achilles injury. Maybe started to see a little bit more of an uptick last year. Obviously came back from the Achilles injury the year before. Ryan McLeod, they get him in a trade. That seemed to have worked out so far for the Buffalo Sabres. Anything on either of these guys and how you think things play out here?
I would be careful with Ryan McLeod. I definitely would like to see him sign a long-term deal, but the Sabres have been down this road before. You know, you're rewarding guys who've had 1 year,
mm-hmm.
one, you know, improved year. McLeod played well with Edmonton, but he had career highs in everything, goals, assists, points last year by far. But it's only been 1 year. So what do you do? They really made mistakes signing a lot of these young guys to 7-8 year deals, and now they're regretting it, you know. And I'd wondered if Dylan Cousins' deal would be one they could move. It was. They were able to move it. Now, I don't think they're regretting Tage Thompson's contract. You know, I don't think they're regretting Rasmus Dahlin's contract, but there was others that they did it too early, Samuelson and Cousins. And so, well, what do you do with McLeod? Do you sign him maybe to a 2 or 3 year deal and see if last year was indeed real, which I would say, if you made me guess, I would think it was. But they've been burned before by this. And did you notice when all these guys could have been negotiated with last July 1st, none of them were. They stopped doing that because they had been burned by it and maybe had learned their lesson. So that's an interesting thought process when he's only had the one fantastic year like that. What do you do with him? Do you bridge them and give them a 2-3 year deal to see if it's really real? Or, and in Jack Quinn's case, to me, it's very simple. You give him his qualifying offer and say, Jack, take it or leave it. This is it. We need to see more from you. You know, you want to sign your qualifying offer, fine. If you want to hold out, that's your business, but this is all you're getting. That's how I would handle that one. That definitely has to be a show me type of a contract.
And then finally, of course, in goal. I mean, we've talked about how to handle the goalie situation, but there's also the money part of it with Devon Levi. He's also a restricted free agent. How do you think this team goes about that? And part of this might be, Paul, what they envision and where they envision him to be next year. I mean, you're not going to pay a guy a certain number if he's going to be in Rochester still, but at the same time, you need to thread that needle.
Well, it becomes a two-way contract, and what that means is you get paid a certain amount to be in Rochester, and you get paid another amount to be in Buffalo. Unless you do sign a one-year deal, then you get paid your NHL salary while you're in Rochester. So, you know, he still does not have to be on waivers to go down to Rochester. I know Kevin Adams said on Locker Cleanout Day that he's perfectly comfortable if they earn the job in training camp of coming into the season with two young players like that. I don't know if I do know. I would not be comfortable at all going into the season with two young goaltenders like that. I mean, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has done it, not this past year, but the year before. For 35 games after January 1st, he was at the top of the league in many of his numbers. He was great, made the big save when it needed to be made. He didn't do enough of that last year, did it sometimes, but not enough of it. He degressed. So what have you got there? And Levi, you've handed him the job twice now, and he hasn't been able to do it. He hadn't earned it. He had it handed to him. He had a really good season in Rochester. He was an all-star. Started the playoffs lights out. You know, gave up two goals, the first two goals of the series against Syracuse, and didn't give up another goal in the three games with two consecutive shutouts. But then he played the best regular season team in the league, and his numbers were horrible. I mean, he had the one good game to keep the series alive in game four, but in the three losses, he just was not good at all. Neither was his team. They didn't play well in front of him, but he wasn't all that good. And that, to me, was a red flag. It's like, okay, overall, he had a good season in Rochester, but where is he right now? You know, can you count on him to step into the NHL? That last series gave me some doubts. So I would not at all, if I were the general manager of the Sabres, be comfortable with going into the season with those two. It could work out. They both could be fantastic. And it also could go down the drain. And if it goes down the drain, the drought now reaches 15. Because if you don't have goaltending, you are not going to win.
Paul, a couple of big picture items before I let you go here. Just a couple minutes left, and I appreciate your time. I know you got to run. Olympic teams starting to be announced, at least the first six. Any surprises? I guess J.J. Paterka not being among the first six in Germany was a bit of a surprise to some people. And then on the heels of this, do you expect Tage Thompson to be a part of Team USA eventually?
I do, and the Paterka thing probably was the only thing that surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the best. He's not better than Dreisaitl, but to me, he's one of the top six from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And has always done pretty well when he's played for Team Germany. And I had read somewhere, well, it's because they don't know his contract situation. The Olympics are in February.
Yeah, who cares?
J.J. Paterka will have a contract by February.
With somebody.
Whether it's here, whether it's somewhere else.
Yeah.
But J.J., so I'm not buying that. I don't get that. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. If that's Germany's thought is, well, we have to wait to see what his contract situation is. I can tell you what his contract situation is. He will have one by February. He's not going to be sitting out, either he'll be traded or have a contract or even sign his qualifying offer if he has to, just to get a one-year deal and then do it again the next year. But he will have a contract by then. So, yeah, that was the one that did surprise me. Is other than that, though, it was pretty straightforward for the other teams.
And then finally, Paul, I just saw the Stanley Cup Twitter account, like the Stanley Cup little Twitter account, tweeted out, "I'll be in the building tonight." All right, do the Panthers hoist it tonight?
I hope not, because I'd like to see more hockey.
Yeah, I know. Me too, buddy.
The way these two teams have been playing.
Sorry, I know you don't like making predictions, I guess. I guess the overall sentiment, though, just about how this series is going, I guess I'd ask you.
Yeah, I don't care who wins. I just want to see seven games.
Yeah.
So in that case, I guess I hope Edmonton wins this particular game to keep this series going, which would be fantastic. So, you know, Ford is playing awfully well, but the way Edmonton goes, I never count them out. The last couple of games, they haven't got goaltending, but I know both those goaltenders are perfectly capable of standing on their head and have done it throughout these playoffs many times, and even last year's playoffs in Skinner's case. He had problems last year, then all of a sudden took off, and they took them to the Stanley Cup Finals. So I never count this group out with Dreisaitl and McDavid, capable goaltending when they're on. So, you know, you would think Florida at home could close it out, but, hey, I don't count this Edmonton Oilers team out at all.
Paul, enjoy the rest of your day, the rest of your week. We'll catch up soon. Thanks a lot, my man.
Yeah, good talking to you. Take care.
You too. That is Paul Hamilton. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, it's WGR day. I say that because, yeah, you're listening to WGR, but it's also because I got Brian Colzio coming up. Brian's going to talk a little bit about what we saw in the U.S. Open over the weekend. Fantastic punt to win it by J.J. Spahn. And a little bit on the Sabre stuff from Brian as well. And some things coming up that you'll want to know about as far as golf is concerned here in the area. We'll get with Brian Colzio after this timeout in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North Convenience Stores, fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I just called it WGR Day here on WGR. That's because you just heard from Paul, and now you're going to hear from Brian Colzio and the Western Hotline. U.S. Open over the weekend, Father's Day. It was great kind of settling back and watching the last, you know, 6-7 holes after the rain delay. And then all of a sudden, J.J. Spahn with that incredible, what, 64-foot putt, Brian? That was unbelievable, wasn't it?
It really was. I mean, good morning, by the way. It was awesome that he's able to have that moment. There's not a lot of like, hey, you hit a putt to win. Now, officially, I know he didn't need that putt to win, but it obviously is the winning putt. So it's pretty wild. I mean, he's a guy that has struggled throughout his career to kind of keep it going, and he's had his best year ever. He lost in a playoff to Rory McIlroy at the Players Championship. That's kind of where he really, you know, I guess got known this year. And then obviously on the stage this time, I mean, overcoming, to me, I think a great lesson for all of us in any sport that you play. Like, he had a terrible start. He had a ton of bad breaks. Shoots a 40 on the front nine, which for the most part, like, that would do you in. And he talked about how the rain delay kind of, you know, gave him a reset. He even changed clothes. He mentioned what would Tiger do here? Well, he would grind it out. He wouldn't just throw it in and say, well, it's not my day kind of thing. And boy, what a recovery. He played outstanding. He was definitely the best player after the rain delay and after the restart, and a pretty thrilling finish. That is an epic career highlight moment right there in the rain. Yeah. The long putt, the caddy jumps in the air with the umbrella. He throws his putter up in the air. The crowd's going bananas on the final hole at a historic venue in a major. Like, that's, you know, for him, that's the highlight of his career right there.
Brian, I mean, his highest career finish in a major was 23rd overall at the 2022 Masters. What do we know about J.J. Spaun, and how did this happen?
So this year he's gotten, I would say, up to this point where maybe it's not as surprising as, I know you look statistically at what his career had been and you'd say this is a major shock. But he had a really good season. As I said, he finished second at the Players' Championship. That's a really, really tough event. That's as tough as any non-major there is. And he had been playing well this year. He's had some top 10 finishes. He had gotten his world ranking up to 25 in the world. So if you said, hey, you know, the U.S. Open winners ranked 25th in the world, that wouldn't sound that surprising. And that's kind of what he's done this year. He's just been very consistent. He's an excellent putter. He said that he has really changed his mentality. He thought maybe golf was, you know, he thought a few years ago, he's like, well, maybe this is what my golf career was meant to be. I've had a good career. He had one career win. Like, okay, you know, maybe this is kind of it for me. And then he had taken a new approach about, like, handling pressure better and handling these scenarios better and not really kind of having these huge swings in emotion. I think you saw that on display, Sal, during the round. Anytime you see Spaun, he seems very kind of even-keeled. And, you know, look, I'm going to keep doing the best I can, and if it works out in the end, then great. And obviously that mentality, I thought, was really, really impressive. I mean, the U.S. Open can stress out a golfer more than any other tournament itself. I mean, and Oakmont is probably the hardest test of all of them to begin with. So you're already going into a stressful situation with a ton of pressure, and I thought he just handled it beautifully. I mean, a lot of us could probably say, oh, he had a couple of bad breaks, a couple of bad bounces, then he hits the pin on a great shot, and it spins all the way off the green and all the way down the hill, and you're thinking, like, man, how much worse of luck could you get? And he didn't pack it in. He came back with a nice reset and played outstanding on the back nine. To shoot a 40 and then a 32, I mean, you have to be, I think, pretty strong-willed to do that. I think that's a great lesson for all of us. Like, not only if you're just playing in your casual round with your buddies, like if you get off to a bad start, like, hey, there's a lot of golf to go. You can still make it a great day in terms of your score. Or you're just playing any sport. You get down, you get behind. Like, what a great lesson from us to see from Spaun that, hey, if you stick with it and you keep a great attitude throughout, like, good things can happen.
When you look at the leaderboard on Saturday and into Sunday, it almost, if you look at the names, now I know you are very dialed into golf, but to the average golf viewer, it kind of felt like a random tournament, you know, in June that it's not a major with the names. And that's no disrespect, right? Spaun, McIntyre, Hovland, Cam Young, Hatton, Ortiz. You didn't see Scheffler or Rahm until later. You didn't see Rory McIlroy. Is that good for golf or not good for golf?
I think for the most part, it's good for golf, I'll argue, because now you're getting another set of names, Sal, that the next time you watch golf this week, you'll know Spaun, and you'll know his story, and you'll know McIntyre, and you'll know his story, and you'll know Sam Burns, and you'll know his story. And this is how we get to know the next set of stars. Now, I'm not going to say superstars. That would be what you said with Scheffler and with Rahm and with McIlroy. They have raised their game over time to get to superstar status in the sport. But I think you have this next tier of players that all are obviously outstanding players in their own right. They wouldn't be on the professional tour if they weren't. But you start to learn about Spaun, you start to learn about Sam Burns, you start to learn about Robert McIntyre, and you find qualities that maybe you find likable about them. Robert McIntyre earned a ton of fans by not even hitting a golf shot. Obviously, he played well, but he's sitting there in the clubhouse and the TV coverage pans to him showing his reaction to Spaun's putt and how he clapped and kind of said, like, wow, like, you know, what a way there kind of to win. And it was at his expense. I mean, if that putt doesn't go in at the speed that it's at, maybe it goes 5 or 6 feet by if Spahn doesn't get that comeback, or McIntyre's in a playoff, and maybe he's the U.S. Open champion we're talking about here on a Tuesday. So, for him to react with such class and be mostly in awe of the great putt that Spahn hit, even though it was at his expense in terms of losing because of it, I thought McIntyre really likable. And McIntyre, of course, won the Canadian Open last year, the Scottish Open, mm-hmm. So he's kind of starting to make a name for himself. Hovland is still a top 10 player. I thought maybe this is going to be his time. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he's talented enough to do so. Adam Scott, if you're older like you and I, we all know about Adam Scott.
Yep.
Winning the Masters. He's kind of at the tail end of his career. He would have been the second oldest to ever win a U.S. Open. Hal Irwin in 1990 is the oldest at age 46. Adam Scott at age 44, that would have been a really, really maybe nice bookend to what is a pretty outstanding career in its own right. But, yeah, there were a lot of different storylines there. Scheffler himself, world number one, Sal, definitely had the opportunities. I mean, got every hole you'd go to that they would go to him. He's sitting here like, oh, he's got a makeable birdie putt chance here, and it was just he couldn't make one. And that plus four number for a while that looked in play had Rahm in it too, and had some other maybe bigger names. That the back nine, it was so crazy. There were so many times where I thought, this guy's still in it. This guy's still got a chance. Holy cow, Scheffler still could be the guy that comes out on top here. And we haven't even talked about the guy that had the lead for the most of the day, and that was Sam Burns. He obviously putted as good as anybody through 3.5 rounds. The hot putter went away down the stretch. I thought he got a bad break on not getting relief when he had that ball stuck in the water. He took a double bogey, and then him and Adam Scott are battling through the rain. There's the rain element through this whole thing too. Like so many different branches to how it played out, but memorable tournament for sure, with how many different outcomes were possible at the end.
Brian Colzio on the Wester Hotline. All right, Brian, the postmortem on Oakmont. Was it as bad, as tough? I mean, it was certainly challenging. I mean, you look at the scores, but just kind of all the talk that went into it. Did it live up to, oh my God, this was just ridiculous?
I thought it was probably the right balance of them wanting to, the USGA would love the winning score to be even. Well, it essentially was. He was minus one. So they got what they wanted. I thought it was very tough. I really did. The rough, if you hit it in the rough, you lost strokes because of it, unless you hit an incredible shot, which ultimately, again, if you hit an incredible recovery shot, then you should be rewarded for that. Here's what I did like, Sal. There was fluctuation in the leaderboard, and there were birdie opportunities to get yourself back in it. Sometimes at a U.S. Open, we get it where there aren't holes or there aren't chances to, like, come back. It's always about people falling back. I thought this had the appropriate mix of it being extremely challenging, super fast greens, super long rough, all that sort of stuff involved that the U.S. Open is all about, that people love to see. They love to see the carnage. They want to see the pros really, really struggle. They don't want to see maybe the winner being minus 22. I get that. I think it had all that. But at the same time, look at how Spahn finishes. He finishes birdie, birdie. The 17th hole was a drivable hole. He drove it. He hit one of the best drives of his life right there. So there were opportunities to score. And I think that's why everybody loves the Masters so much, because on the back nine on Sunday, those holes that are set up on the back nine are set up for there to be eagle opportunities, but also risk-reward. You could end up in the water and take a double bogey. And I thought, for the U.S. Open, that always doesn't play out that way. And at Oakmont, I was like, oof, are we just going to see guys just falling and it's going to be survival of the fittest? There was some of that, but there were also guys that came up, like McIntyre and like Spahn. Just because they were at plus four and plus five didn't mean they couldn't get themselves back to plus one or ultimately minus one. So I thought it was the appropriate mix for what people like to see in a U.S. Open, for what the USGA likes to set it up. I have very little complaints with how that tournament played out in terms of the course and, how the setup went.
Next up, Shinnecock Hills next year for the U.S. Open, Long Island.
That's right. Yeah, out in Southampton, way out on the edge of Long Island. It's been hosting tournaments forever. And the last time it was there for a major, it was there for a PGA championship. Brooks Koepka won. The last time it was there for a U.S. Open, Retief Goosen beat Phil Mickelson. That was in 2004. That was a place where I was actually there in 2004. They were spraying greens in between groups with a hose because the greens had gotten out of hand. It was super hot. And way out on Long Island, there's always wind because you've got the ocean basically right on top of the course. And if it's windy and the greens are fast, you could have balls just blowing off of it. So I'm sure the USGA learned their lesson from that we won't get that again. But yeah, that's where it'll be next time. Another one of those really, really, hard courses that have had a long tradition of hosting majors.
And then the next major this year will be at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland, the British Open, the Open Championship. What do we know about this course?
So it was in the rotation for the Open, years and years, decades ago. And then it kind of went away. They did a restoration of the course, and now it's kind of back in. They want to get Ireland involved. Scotland hosts Open Championship. England hosts it, but they didn't have anything in Ireland regularly. So they renovated Royal Portrush. It was there, I believe, 2019. And that was Shane Lowry's win, where he won a major. Coming back to Ireland, to me, an interesting storyline is going to be, how does McIlroy handle this? Because he, post-Masters, to me, Sal, has not handled it well. He's had arguments with blaming media. Mm. He's upset that his name got out in public about the driver specs, that it didn't conform. Even though Scotty Scheffler's name was too, I think he's annoyed at the media that McIlroy's name was in the stories about the driver not conforming and Scheffler's wasn't, even though they both essentially had their drivers pulled. I don't know why he should be. I can understand maybe why he's taking aim at the media, but the media doesn't do the specs. The USGA officials that do the specs. So somebody from the USGA leaked that to the media. He's saying, oh, the media leaked my name. Well, they're not the writer from golf.com is not checking out and weighing your driver and checking out the grooves on your driver to see whether or not they conform to the rules or not. And by the way, I just want to make clear, his driver not conforming, Sal, doesn't mean he cheated at the Masters or had an illegal driver. All it means is that maybe over time, the grooves have worn off to the point where the face doesn't conform. Or if you have a club that you've hit it so many times, maybe it's worn off enough to the point where it doesn't meet a certain specification or a certain weight or, something like that. It doesn't mean that he was cheating or that it was illegal. It just, at some point over time, because these pros hit, 500 golf balls a day sometimes, it doesn't, meet the specs. It just wears out because it's a piece of equipment. So it doesn't mean, but I think people associated that with cheating. I think Rory didn't like that. He clearly hasn't played well post-Masters. It's so weird. I had it all wrong. I thought after the Masters, you just accomplished. He said, I've accomplished everything I've wanted to in golf. He's won all the majors. He's been a Ryder Cup hero. He's won the Grand Slam. I thought he would play freely, free swinging. Hey, if I miss a cut, no big deal. How could I be in a bad mood? I've accomplished everything I want to in the sport. When you say something like that, you think, nothing could put you in a bad mood. When instead it's been the other way. He's been very aggravated with the media. He's pissy with fans. He, to me, doing things that he shouldn't do, smashing tee signs, throwing clubs. He knows the influence he has in the game. He was the voice of the PGA Tour through the whole Live versus PGA Tour thing that has been going on for years. He's got global presence and he's got global influence on kids, and people obviously would call him their golf hero. For him to do some of the stuff that he's been either saying or doing, I didn't even care if I made the cut. Something's not right with him. He quoted saying more people die going down Mount Everest than going up. Well, going up, you have that goal. You're reaching for it. You're fighting through adversity. Going down, it's like you did it already. How do you handle going down? Well, he hasn't been handling it going down at all. I think he needs a break. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him play until the Open Championship. But it's in Ireland, in his home country. They should be celebrating his outstanding accomplishment. I hope he comes in with a better frame of mind because he has done a lot of good for the game. He has been the voice of the PGA Tour for a long time. I know you want to take a step back from that. And I do think overall, he has made golf better in so many ways. I think he's had a bad couple of weeks. I'm willing to maybe say handling his success, maybe not everybody would handle it perfectly. And I don't think he has. And I'm hoping that maybe a little break and a little refocus and coming back in kind of a different mindset, we'll see maybe the Rory McIlroy that is so likable here that we've seen for the majority of his career.
Hey, I only got a minute left here with you, but I wanted to ask you, speaking of rules, about the Sam Burns situation, the water. What did you think about the ruling?
I thought he should have gotten relief.
Mm-hmm.
Just based upon what has happened at normal PGA Tour events, I've seen less water, give a player a drop. Ultimately, he got an opinion. He asked for a second opinion. They stuck together with not giving him relief. I thought he should have. I know there's video on social media that Kyle Porter, who works for CBS, he showed him like stepping in the area where Sam Burns hit and showed a ton of water coming up. Even Burns with his club, every time he took the practice swing, there was a ton of water up. To me, because Burns is in the lead there, like, I don't know. I would have given him relief. It just seemed as though, like, we've seen it. I know people have said, like, well, officially, if your stance isn't essentially causing water to come up, then it doesn't deem to be in need of relief or in worthy of relief. There was just so much water there. It was, the ball was in a lower spot than his feet was. I thought he should have gotten it. Especially Burns being in the lead. Like, do you want that to be the reason maybe that Burns doesn't win? Burns double bogeys that hole and didn't handle the rest of the hole as well. As much as I was complimenting Spahn earlier for handling the whole day and coming back, Burns did not recover well from that. You wonder if they give him relief, Sal, and he hits the next shot onto the green and pars, are we talking about Sam Burns maybe going on to win? I would be curious to see if it, how it could have played out differently. Now, maybe he still plays poorly down the stretch and, you know, we're having the same result. But I'm sure for Sam Burns, he's definitely probably sitting there thinking, man, if I would have gotten relief there and hit it, you know, gotten a different result on that approach shot and I don't double bogey that hole, he's probably sitting there thinking, maybe I'm the U.S. Open champion today.
I know we're a few weeks away, but Porter Cup's coming up, and then Duster Challenge, right? You want to get the word out about that?
For sure, yep. Porter Cup up at Niagara Falls Country Club is the third week in July, and it is a great amateur tournament. So it's free, open to the public. I know you and I will talk maybe, you know, in another week or two about more of the details about what the field's going to look like.
Yep.
Some of the best amateurs. But that's up at Niagara Falls Country Club in Lewiston. We'll be doing some Tee to Greens up there to preview that on Saturdays. And then our Tee to Green charity Duster Putting Challenge is Friday night, July 18th at Glen Oak. It's open to the public. It's a $49 donation, and all proceeds go to PGA Hope to help veterans get golf experience, help with their mental health, put them back in kind of golfing experiences so they can kind of be with other veterans that have had trouble adjusting back to normal life. So Peter Gourmet is providing the food that night. We're so thankful for that. So $49 donation, you get into the putting tournament, you get the free dinner from Peter Gourmet, you get drinks courtesy of our friends at Michelob Ultra, all these sort of great things. Easiest way to sign up, go to the top of our Twitter page at T2G Buffalo. It's the pinned tweet. It's on the link right there. You can click on it. We'd love to have as many putters out as possible. We had over 100 putters last year come out. Super fun night. Anybody can do it. You don't even have to be a quote-unquote golfer to do it. Just come fun. Putt on the 18-hole putting course that we have. Have dinner, have drinks. We turn on the lights. We play music. It's a ton of fun. I know you and Max have done it. So hopefully everybody can do it again. Friday night, July 18th, our Duster Putter Challenge that Tee to Green runs.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot for doing this today. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Sal. Talk soon.
All right, you got it. We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the hour and then get to the 11 o'clock hour with questions for the, and answers, I should say, from you on Alex Tuck and J.J. Paterka. Heard the question this morning from Jeremy and Joe. If the Florida Panthers win tonight, are they a dynasty? The answer is no, they are not. No, you need like three titles in a row to be a dynasty. It's a dynasty. It's not a back-to-back repeat. That's a repeat. It's not a dynasty. I know they've gone to... It doesn't matter how many you go to if you lose. The dynasty is the winning part.
Okay, well, what about... Like, let's think about the Bandits in this situation. The Bandits went to five straight...
They're a dynasty now because they're three in a row.
If they
won three in a row. That's a dynasty.
So if they didn't win this year, they wouldn't be a dynasty.
I don't think so. I would not count them that.
I think the Panthers are.
I don't. I think you got to win three in a row to be a dynasty. Now, I would massage it a little bit by saying, if you go to five like the Bandits, I would give some room here for, in some way, shape, or form, they won three of the five.
Right, like three out of the five.
Like
the
two,
first and the second.
You go to two and you win, then you don't win two, then you win one, right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's a dynasty. Absolutely. They've been dominating, and sometimes they won, sometimes they didn't. I don't know. Do you think the Miami Heat were a dynasty with LeBron James?
That one was too quick, I feel like.
Why? What do you mean?
It was just, I don't know. I feel like it was just like 3 years.
What have the Panthers been?
Okay. Yeah, you just proved my point there. That's a good point.
They lost. They literally the exact same trajectory. The Heat went to four straight. They lost. They won two and they lost. You don't count them as a dynasty.
Yeah, that's well. Okay. It depends, I guess. Also, too, let's say they win tonight and they win the cup, and then they go next year. What's next year mean?
Right? I think you got to win three in a row to be a dynasty. Sorry.
Okay. All right.
I mean, if you want to talk about getting to like five or something in a row, that's man, holy cow, right?
Right. Like you're
even
always
four
there.
In a row. I don't know. I mean, I think you got to win three. I'm saying no dynasty. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Thanks for joining us here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I got a interesting tweet from someone that kind of challenged me on my dynasty take, and I'll get to that in a second. But first, welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you here today on a Tuesday, June 17th. Josh, do you know when the Bills announced their training camp schedule last year?
I know it's around this time.
June 17th. I'm not saying they're going to today. I don't know. But just keep your head in a swivel. You never know, right? I went back and looked. Last year, according to the emails, because I am an email saver. I'm going to show Josh this off screen. Hold on. If you look, Josh, look at all my folders. Can you see my phone? Okay.
Yeah.
Look at all the folders.
Oh, my goodness. That's four scrolls, five.
Yep.
Five scrolls to get to the bottom of your
email. I have folders for everything. So I am an email saver.
Yeah.
So when I get an email release from the Bills, like a schedule, player availability, anything, I put it in what I call Bills releases because it comes from the Bills PR release. This is just my Bills release folder. Okay, I want to show you this. Okay, hold on. I am still scrolling, I am going all the way back. Where am I? I'm back to 2013, by the way.
I was going to say, do you have them all the way back to when you started?
I am back to 2012. The first one I have is 4th of July, 2012.
Who's the player?
There is a NFL email here. Hold on. Sorry. I think Siri just went off for me for some reason on my phone. I don't want you to send me emails. So thank you. Sorry. All right. I have a media advisory from September of 13th. It's actually the first one from the Bills. Media advisory. It was the regular season media availability schedule. And it was basically what happened. It was the first week of the year, 2013, and what their schedule would be. I have every single one of these.
That's awesome.
So the reason I say this is I went back and looked and said, ooh, if you need to know, you ever need anything on this, Josh, I'm just telling you, I'm your guy. There are other people in the media who literally call me and go, hey, when did the Bills do this last time? And I can search for them because I find it. If you need to know when the Bills did something, I can tell you. When did the training camp schedule come out last year? June 17th. I looked because I went back in my emails. There it is. Okay. So that's what happened back last year on this date. We will see if that's the case this time around. Let me see if... Let me go back to this tweet. All right. I just had a dynasty take, but BBills783 challenged me. And good. He did good job. Way to call me out, BBills. He says, by what you just said of what qualifies for a dynasty, Tom Brady and the Patriots were not one. Okay, you're right. From what I said, that is true. So I reserve the right to kind of massage this a little bit. What I said was, I think you need three in a row to be a dynasty. But I'm talking in a shorter period of time. I think that's how I want to massage it. So you're right. What I said would basically be contradictory. I'm glad you called me out in it because I want to think about this a little bit more, B-Bills. To be a dynasty, I think in a shorter period of time, like over a 3-4-5 year period, I think you need to win three in a row. I think there's other types of dynasties which are, oh my God, for two decades, they were incredible. That was a dynasty that they just kept winning and no one could beat them for two decades and they won a whole bunch of titles over that time period. I would also say, I mean, the Patriots did win how many though, right? So here, the Patriots also, by the way, did win 3 out of 4. It wasn't 3 in a row. They won in 01, 03, 04. That's 3 right there. Then they go back to the Super Bowl in 07 and go back in 11, right? Then they go win again in 14 and 16. And then they go back and lose in 17 and 18. It's crazy. To me, like, the longevity of what they accomplished, that is the dynasty of the Patriots. It's so rare. I think the Spurs are kind of in this boat, too. What's the Spurs? Let me see what they did here. Can you think about how many times they went or won or lost? Here, the Spurs, I would consider the Spurs a dynasty, even though they never even won back-to-back, to be quite honest with you, Josh. The Spurs won it in 99, 03, 05, and 07. They won 4 over an 8-year period. I mean, to me, that's okay. I'm going to qualify that. So I think you got. So I'm going to massage what I said. I think you got to get 3. It doesn't have to be 3 in a row. How about that?
I think that's fair. I wonder, like, what the stipulation of time is. Right.
The time matters.
Because, like,
if you have the same core, because Brady, maybe I'm not wrong on this. They were so together for so long. I think there's kind of an outlier, right, where you call them a dynasty because of the 20-year period, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that's also, like, we were talking a little bit in the break, like, what's the difference between sport to sport,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, in football, it might be different than in baseball, or hockey might be different than basketball. And with the Patriots specifically, I think, in this case, not only is it Brady is the constant, but Belichick is also the constant there. So it's like, what makes up that dynasty? Is it just a couple guys? Is it a whole team? Is it, you know, a coach, a GM, an owner? Like, there's so many different aspects of it, especially when you go sport to sport. In football, if you have a great quarterback, a great coach, and, like, one other great player, that would be a dynasty, as long as you're winning, obviously. Like, the Chiefs right now, for example, obviously that's a dynasty. They've won so much in this short time span with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. But when you look at the Patriots, it was Brady and Belichick. Like, that's what it looks like to me in terms of football,
mm-hmm.
especially just football, because that's so much different with every other sport, because the quarterback is so important to your team.
Yeah, I'll give you another example. I would never not call the Oilers a dynasty from back in the Gretzky Messier days, right? I know they mm-hmm. moved on from Gretzky and still won.
Right.
They never won 3 in a row, but they won 5 out of 7.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing, is, like, there's certain points where you get to, okay, the years are getting too far apart now. Like, it's not.
Yes.
It's kind of over. Like, if you win 3 out of 7, then that's not really a dynasty to me. But if you win 3 out of 5 or 5 out of 7, like, that's incredible.
I just don't. Here's the way I look at it. This goes back to the original point. I just think winning 2 championships in a row should not qualify as a dynasty. I know he went to 3 with the Panthers. But I think you got to get a third somewhere in there. That's what it comes down to for me. I think the Panthers need a third championship if they were to get their second tonight over this time period to be considered a dynasty, even if they go and lose again. That's the way I look at it. And again, I go back to our talk earlier. The Heat went to 4 in a row, but they only won 2. They sandwiched the 2 wins around 2 losses and in between 2 losses. I don't consider the Heat a dynasty. Maybe you do. So, yeah, I think the Panthers could be on their way to being a dynasty. They are not one. The first dynasty, we've had this talk on this show before, it's been a little while. The first dynasty I ever remember in sports was a true dynasty. The New York Islanders won 4 straight Stanley Cups. I mean, that isn't in fact, I believe the New York Post, maybe, or the New York Times, there was a newspaper that literally had, I think it was Mike Bossy, cup over his head, and the word, one word, dynasty, exclamation point. Bam, that was it. Because it was. How could you argue that? They won 4 in a row. And then they went to a 5th, by the way. They lose, and the Oilers win, and then the Oilers go back again and, win again. So, yeah, dynasty is in the eye of the beholder. I do not think that the Panthers winning tonight would qualify them, even though they've gone to 3 in a row. I think you got to get a third at some point.
I actually found an article on sports teams that are considered dynasties but probably aren't dynasties.
Okay.
And some of the options on here are crazy.
Okay.
Like the 85 Bears, some people consider them a dynasty. Right.
That's just like, dumb.
Like
they didn't even go to two Super Bowls.
Right.
They went to one and won it because they were so dominant.
Yeah. And they did have some stats in there that they outscored their three opponents 91-10, which is crazy. But that doesn't make you a dynasty.
They were a one-year – actually, they were really good for a few years, but right. They went to one Super Bowl.
Exactly, yeah. You got to win a championship or two to be at least in the conversation, and they only won one.
At least two.
But the other one that I think is interesting, and it kind of goes to a different avenue, John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats. That whole era. But that's different because it's college sports. And college sports, obviously, there's so much that can go different in that world than professional.
I'm gonna look this up. I would actually say Patino's Wildcats might even be a better, bigger dynasty than Calipari's Wildcats. Patino, maybe not. No, because he only won one. Tubby Smith then won it when he came in. And then, let's see. Calipari, they only won one, though. Calipari's team only won one when he was there. Yeah, I don't know. It's in the eye of the beholder. He was there a long time, though. I've got a lot of more respect for John Calipari over the years. I used to think he was a guy that, whatever, he's cutting corners, he's getting the best recruits. But what he did in Arkansas this year was impressive. And a totally related, unrelated note. Speaking of Arkansas, how about the kid yesterday, Gage Wood, throwing the no-hitter? He hit one batter in the eighth inning. He actually hit another batter, and they said that kid didn't get out of the way, so they didn't give him the base. Called it a strike because it was over the plate, hit the elbow, and that was a strikeout. Weird circumstance, but it happens in baseball. But he gets the he has a no-hitter that would have been a perfect game if he didn't hit a guy in the foot. And what does he say after the game? Does an interview. And they're like, what do you think? You're the third person ever to throw a no-hitter. First one since 1960. And he goes, yeah, I should have hit the guy. That was a great response. You can have some fun and enjoy it, man. And I know you wanted the perfect game, but man, a no-hitter. Pretty amazing. I asked you a little while ago what you would do with both Tuck and Paterka, or at least hinted that I would ask you that. That's my question. And we could take some time to talk about that if you'd like, because I think the Sabres are at a crossroads, as they have been so many times in the last several years with a lot of this stuff. I think the Sabres are at a crossroads with some of this stuff. And I don't know what a lot of you, what direction you think they should go in with this, which is, well, if you don't want to be here, don't be here. Versus, no, you're under contract and you can help us win, so you need to stay here and be a part of the solution. There's a lot of different kind of tentacles to that. And this is on the heels of the Alex Tuck report from a Vancouver podcast, apparently. Do you have the sound, by the way? Can we play that, Josh? I want everybody on this show to hear the sound. I know that Jeremy and Joe played it. What you got to tell me again exactly what podcast this is from. This is from a Vancouver podcast. It's about Alex Tuck. And it is them talking about maybe getting Tuck from Buffalo or what the situation is with him. I had Paul Hamilton on earlier to kind of recap what Tuck talked about or didn't talk about in his locker cleanout day. What exactly is this?
This is the Sakaris and Price podcast out in Vancouver.
They're a pretty reputable Vancouver hockey podcast, right? Canucks podcast. Here we go. This is what they said.
Yeah, I've always appreciated the way that he approaches the game and the physical tools that he has. And you're right. I think we're all waiting for shoes to start dropping in Buffalo here. And it is incredible. As I speak to you, we're 2 weeks from the NHL draft and people are expecting fireworks and people are expecting fireworks from the Vancouver Canucks. So, I mean, Alex Tuck is a proven goal scorer with size and a guy that has a little bit of an edge to his game as well. So, yeah, without a doubt, if there is a path, then I know that the Canucks have been linked to basically the entire top half of the Buffalo Sabres roster. If they're playing, let's make a deal with the Buffalo Sabres, absolutely. I think serve them well to be kicking tires and kicking them pretty heavily on a guy like Alex Tuck.
Interesting, right? We don't know where Alex Tuck is on all this. Now, in his situation, he is going into the final year of his contract, which means he can sign a contract extension, but not until July 1st. We're just around the corner from that. The question is, does he want to do that? If he does, what does that look like? Or does he say, no, I'll play out one more year in Buffalo, keep me on the roster, and if things aren't going well, you can trade me at the deadline. But if he says that, the Sabres may say, we're not doing that. Like, it's either you are here or you're not here. We'd like to get something for you now, a summer trade. I don't know. Because what are you talking about the deadline? You're talking about prospects, right? And I don't think the Sabres need to do that. I would hope they would not want to do that, considering the prospect pipeline they have already, what they've done, the youth of this roster, this organization, having a number 9 overall pick again. I don't want that. Hope they don't want that. So this is an interesting spot for how Tuck wants to approach it and how the Sabres want to approach it. But the Sabres do have Alex Tuck under contract for one more year, just like the Bills do with James Cook, and we remind everybody of that. Sabres also have J.J. Paterka under contract as a restricted free agent. They have his rights, I should say. He's not under a contract right now or hasn't signed one, but he's a restricted free agent. He can't just walk and go somewhere. If that were the case, he'd probably be gonzo at this point. But the Sabres have kind of a decision to make how they want to approach J.J. Paterka. And recently, Elliot Friedman, in case you haven't heard, yesterday we talked a little bit about it. He said, quote, "I have said on this podcast and in my radio interview several times now that the Sabres have indicated they do not want to trade J.J. Paterka. Their answer has changed. They are at least now listening on it. And I think that's recent." End quote. That's from Elliot Friedman. Now, when I hear the first part of that quote, which says their answer has changed, I don't think he's saying their answer has changed. They want to trade him. What their answer has changed on, the way I interpret that is, okay, we'd be dumb at least not to listen to what people say. But you better come with a really, really good offer for J.J. Paterka. And obviously from Paterka's standpoint, again, I'll go back to J.J. Paterka may be unhappy all he wants. And I don't blame him for being unhappy if he wants to win. Winning fixes everything. Everybody wants to win. Alex Tuck wants to win. Everybody wants to win. Nobody's winning right now in Buffalo, right? I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. But he is also under contract and, again, a young player who can help you. I think the Sabres are better with J.J. Paterka on their roster than not on their roster. You can convince me that other people could make them better, sure. But if you just told me right now, either he's here or not, they're a better team with him. And I think they should operate as such. 803-0550 is the number to call. Let's get Mark in West Seneca on, who wants to chime in on this. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Sal. So much to talk about. I know I don't have enough time because I'll run off on it because the Sabres are my love. I'm 66 years old. I was 10 years old when I was at the last Buffalo Bisons game at the odd to win the. And I've been a Sabre fan my whole life. And to see what has happened to our organization is just so disheartening. I don't understand the Yarmo move. I love it that they finally brought in a guy with a ton of experience and a ton of relationships around the league into the organization because they continually hired people in both coach and GM for years now that have never had those positions before, head coach and GM. So to see that move being made, I don't understand the advantage that you have by holding on to Adams while doing this.
What you don't understand, it's not that you don't understand Yarmo is what you're saying. You don't understand why Kevin Adams is still in his position.
What is Kevin Adams bringing to the table if he needs a guy like Yarmo over the top advising or whatever? It just does not make any sense other than a form of nepotism because Terry Pegula loves Kevin Adams. And as far as I know, I'm not getting personal with Kevin. From what I understand, he's an absolutely top-notch, stand-up, wonderful man, okay? In 5 years, he has not shown, the need to be made. I understand it. But you talk about players being unhappy. How demoralizing is it that you move a guy out who was a core player and the guy you brought in can't even get on the ice because of injury? It leaves doubt in the players. They're looking for help.
Who are we talking about? Who are we talking about?
Josh Norris, when they brought him in.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think that in that case, we could see what happened. The Sabres, from their end, they wanted more upside, but were risking the availability, where the Senators said, we want more availability, we'll get rid of the upside, right? Like, obviously, there's more of a ceiling on Cousins, I think, that we'd all agree on, but the Senators wanted more availability. And the Sabres say, look, I mean, we'll deal with the availability and shut him down if we have to, especially when it happened, but we want more at upside when he's playing.
But Sal, you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, but my point about bringing that trade up is this. When they made that trade, they're looking for help on the roster, in the moment. When you move a core player, players want to see a guy come in and be on the ice on the roster and playing in the moment, and wow, this is going to work good for us. We hate to see our buddy go, but this guy's going to really help us.
What did he do? He did play right away, just so you know. I mean, he got hurt after that.
Yeah, well, he didn't play in the lineup long enough to help him.
I know, but what you just said, though, was you want to see a guy right away get in. He did. He played like four games, then he got hurt. I mean, like, it wasn't like he, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. They didn't trade for an injured player.
Sal, come on. The guy has a history of being injured. Okay?
I know that. I'm just correcting what you're saying, Mark, because that wasn't factually true. He did play right away.
Okay, so he played right away. He didn't play long enough to make a difference.
I got you. Sure.
Okay, he didn't play long enough. And his history may have played into that, okay? We don't know, but that very well may have played into that. My point is this, that when the guys looked around after four games, Josh Norris isn't in the lineup, they're thinking, where are we going here? And now it's all playing out from word that people are hearing on the street, things that Paul Hamilton said, that you have a very disgruntled roster right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking around for upper management and leadership to do something to make this team better, to give them hope. Right now, if I'm a player on that team, I'm looking around. If I'm a young player that has a long career yet, or I'm halfway through my career, I'm sitting there going, where's the hope here? Are things ever going to change? Okay, the one thing they did do that could have given the players hope, and I hate to say it this way, would have been to move Kevin Adams out, put an experienced guy in like Yarmo, and let's see what he can do. Maybe make a couple of trades. But right now, the way things are all situated, I don't know that if I'm a player on that team, I have any hope of anything happening. History has shown over the last 5 years that significant trades are not Kevin Adams is not capable of making them.
Well, actually, okay. I actually think he made two good trades. I think the Bo Byram trade was a good one. Casey Mittelstadt did nothing. And I think that the Ryan McLeod trade was a good one. That's not been Kevin Adams failing. The a couple trades he's made, player for player trades, have not been Kevin Adams failing.
Okay. Can I expand? And I know I'm taking up a lot of your time.
Yes.
But the Mittelstadt trade, when they moved Mittelstadt, he was their highest point producer on the forward group. He was probably their best forward at the time. And he was playing up and down the lineup. I agreed with the trade. They needed defensive help. It was a great trade. He brought in, Bo. So that's a good move. So then he turns around and he gets McLeod. Another good move. Okay.
Right. So he's made two good trades there.
My point is this. Okay. So he refills the spot that he had with the Mittelstadt move, and he's got Byram. He's building the team. And now here we are. And
I know, Byram? Mark. I do have to run. Okay, listen, I get it. Mark. The point is, I'm not trying to cut you off or anything, but listen, you have made your point clear that you don't think Kevin Adams is right for the job, and the fact that he's still in his job is making other people disgruntled. But we can go pick apart every move he's made. That's fine. That's your overall point, correct?
Somewhat.
Okay.
Somewhat.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. And I'm not trying to just cut you off because you could just go through every. Mark, you could spin it to everything he's done is wrong. I'm going to tell you, I think the Ryan McLeod trade has been a pretty good one. Matthew Savoy has yet to sniff staying in the NHL. And McLeod actually played pretty well for the Sabres last year. That's a pretty good trade. Let's see how it turns out with the contract. That's where maybe some of the feelings have come from Kevin Adams. I don't think it's been these player for player trades. I mean, I lost my train of thought. Bo Byram coming in, the Casey Mittelstadt trade. Casey Mittelstadt gets shipped off after he signs another extension over in Colorado. He gets shipped off, right? Those are two good trades he's made. The biggest failing of Kevin Adams has been probably value and contracts. And that's kind of where we are right now of how is this going to play out this summer? And also maybe not moving. That's also his biggest failure maybe has been not moving. By his own admission, by the way, during the long losing streak last year, the 13-game losing streak, 14-game, whatever the heck it was, him saying, I should have moved earlier. I should have done something earlier. Holding on, waiting, that's also been a failing of his. I don't get to the he made this trade bad or that trade bad. Your overall point of, which is a really good one, I think, that a lot of people share with you, Mark. Hey, why are you bringing in Jarmo Kekalainen if he's going to be in this position? You have Kevin Adams here. it's a results-oriented business. This team hasn't advanced. They haven't done anything. They haven't gotten to the playoffs. Just move him out. It's not a Yarmo point. It's Kevin Adams' point. It's what it is. And I get it. And it's not the wrong one, I think, for a lot of people. I appreciate it. And I know Mark talks a lot when he calls because he's passionate. Nothing wrong with that. But I did have to go because I'm way up against the break. And I appreciate that. Thank you very much for the phone call. Getting connected with our fans brought to you by Northtown Kia and our passionate fans. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Western New York, number one Kia dealer. We will take a timeout. We'll come back. Hey, you know what I want to do? Vince Carter was at Bill's OTAs and minicamp. He had a great media session. And I talked about it when it happened. And I really haven't played it on this show. And I want to do that. I want you to hear Vince Carter. For all of us that's team culture and how much it matters, this guy that was so, you know, had such a long career and played the highest of levels. And now he's involved in football. A really good media session with Vince Carter a couple weeks ago. We haven't really played it here, and I want to do that. We'll do that after this timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. We had a little talk about dynasties earlier.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Well, I think the Oklahoma City Thunder are a type of team with their age and their core that could create a dynasty if they first get this first one. They are one game away from winning the NBA title. That game will be played Thursday, on this Thursday night at 8:30 in Indiana. Indiana looking to win their first title. They have to win this game six, then get it back to Oklahoma City for game seven. In the meantime, a former great NBA player, Hall of Famer, Vince Carter, is now a minority owner slash investor in the Buffalo Bills. He was at Bills OTAs a couple weeks ago. He actually had a media session after one of the practices. I thought it was fantastic, and I'd really like all of you to hear it. So this is Vince Carter at Buffalo Bills practice.
Said that was the first time you've met Josh Allen?
That was a joke.
You look like old friends.
Yeah, that was
you
a joke. Like, yeah, prior to being around, if you would, in Tahoe, playing the Tahoe golf tournament. So we've played together a couple of times, and leading up to the potentially being around and being with the team, I said, hopefully I'll see you around soon. And he looked at me kind of crazy, like, whatever that means. And then everything happened. He's like, ah, I got it. So it's pretty cool.
Why come out here, you know, OTAs and be part of the team?
I mean, if I'm going to be here and be a part of it, you know, that's just me being a veteran in general. That's just what I know, just to communication, conversation, and just kind of the edge for young guys more than anything, like understanding the professional life and the preparation and, you know, what you have to go through, the daily grind, more so than the sport you play. It's just how you go about it. And anytime I can, you know, I do it for any sport, like just to talk to guys and just share what I know or what I think I know, at least.
Were you, you didn't cross over with Ron, did you, at Carolina?
So I'm a little ahead of him. And but when he came in for his visits back in the day, you know, it's just, it's funny, full circle, like we're older men now, and to kind of see us at this platform as the last time we actually really had a chance to come conversate, he was coming in for a visit at Carolina.
How, I saw you catch up with him. How cool is it that he's out here doing this,
yeah,
and in this sport right now after everything you saw with him?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, I don't know if you guys watched him in high school. He's pretty darn good at both sports, and obviously you knew he had a chance to be great in whatever he chose to do. So to have a conversation, I think, with us in this dynamic is pretty surreal.
Do you feel like you have a role in your ownership part, or is it kind of what you're doing now or what you choose to do?
This is what I choose to do. I don't know if it's my role. I don't have a problem making it my role. But I just want to be an outlet, you know, to these guys. Like, I've been around, seen a lot. The mental part of the game, physically taxing, you know, just the conversation. Because, I mean, as athletes, I think the wonderful thing about being an athlete, regardless of what sport you're in, you can have those type of conversations and pull from those experiences. And, you know, like sitting with Coach McDermott before the interview, like you said, we were just talking about different things, and they all kind of correlate and they all tie into each other. And it's pretty cool to, you know, for me, you know, I just see me as Vince and can pull from just experiences and different things that I've seen, which other people actually care about, which is pretty cool.
I remember seeing it at the owners' meetings, NFL owners' meetings, a couple of years ago. Yeah. And now you're here.
Yeah.
You've gone through this a little bit. Is there anything that strikes you as different between the NBA, even through the off season, the people, anything like that, than with the NFL?
Well, I mean, it's a different beast. It's a lot of guys. So I think, so as a veteran, you know, I think now as a veteran, I come into a locker room, this many guys, you know, I know how I felt as the veteran with young guys, with 10, 12 guys. So I just, you know, I look at it like that. It's like, that's a lot of people that, you know, as you have to find your way. So as a veteran, in my opinion, you got to figure out how to be the best version of yourself. You want to be an extension of the coach somewhat, regardless of the side of the ball you're on. And you want to be able to assist younger guys, regardless of their rookies, fifth, sixth year, whatever, you know, to help them to be the best version of themselves for the good of the team, to try to reach that ultimate goal. And how to balance that, I think, is if you're deemed as one of the leaders, the voice, the veteran, that's a tough task. So that's kind of what I want with Josh, with Deion, any of these guys, just to kind of give them another outlet. Because I was at 43 years old, 42 years old. I'm still pulling Kevin Willis, Charles Oakley, guys who are my veterans aside, asking them questions on how to be a veteran, how to navigate through it, because they've been there. And I literally told a couple of coaches, I said, I was never afraid to not learn or be coached. That day, you know, so I know what that feels like, and I know it made me feel better when I knew I had somebody that I can bounce things off of to help me in my situations, even if they were there or not there.
Vince, I know it's only been a couple of months, but what have you learned about the way the Bills do things here?
Oh, man, it's a lot of things. I mean, I just love the way they go about the business. I love how the fans love their team and their sport. Like, it's, you know, it gives you the college atmosphere to me. Like, you know, professional sports come sometimes, if you all know, can be finicky. You know, if your team's not doing well, it's like, all right, well, who's the next hot team or team? Like, I don't get that vibe here at all. It's like our team, and I love that people will ride the ship, whether we sink or sail. And it's a beautiful thing. And I'm going to be honest when I say this. I thought being a part of it was like, okay, cool. Oh, yeah, Vince, cool. But, like, the cool comments from Bills Mafia from day one was kind of cool. Like, welcome to the family. It's just, I didn't think it was just shrug off the shoulder and just kind of keep moving. Oh, yeah, cool. Basketball player coming on. Yeah, cool. Like, it was welcoming. And I think that's kind of was the motivation to come here and be a part of it even more. I mean, like, you have guys like Dion. We've had a lot of conversations throughout this, since I've been here, and just having cool conversations about life preparation and responsibility. That's just what I enjoy, and they allow me to do that.
With the fans, you feel like you're one of their guys now?
I guess so. You know, that's pretty cool. Like, I guess I haven't thought about that. But I guess so. I mean, because they love their team and everybody who's a part of it, yes, I guess that would be a thing. And that's what makes me, I think, even more want to do what I can to help these guys on the field. Like I say, I don't have anything invested into it. It makes me smile to sit back and say, hey, the conversation with a particular player that helped turn the light on, because I know what that did for me as a young guy. And I just feel like that is so important when, you know, that's our in the sport of basketball right now. You know, veterans are it's you don't see many of them. It's just scarce. You might have one per team, but like that one guy holds a real value. And if you can get more guys that's played the sport, more guys who've been in situations that can talk to guys to turn those lights on, good things can happen for your team.
There's a basketball hoop in there. Are you staying away? Are you getting there? How many guys have asked you to come over there and chop
it up? But it doesn't do it for me anymore. Like, it's like I look at it, it's like, oh, it's cool. Like, you put a golf club in my hand, it's still different. But it's still there. Like, I have young kids, so I'm more of a rebounder these days. You know, every now and then I'll shoot him the show because my kid now is having some success in sport and thinks he's pretty good. So sometimes I run. Look, dad was once top five in 3-point shooting, you know, once. It's just, I see it. I've shot on it a couple times, though.
Vince, that's an all-time great in your own sport. Was there anything that stuck out to you about the way Josh and guys like Dion approached practice today?
I love the energy, the want to. Wanting to be here, I think that's important because he just won MVP. You know, it's easy to enjoy it, but like it's on to the next. And I love that because being that you're so close to accomplishing that goal of a championship and you fall short, that means he's hungry. Like he's not satisfied. And that's a beautiful thing. And what that does is it doesn't let anybody else off the hook. If your best players are here, going after it, like not BSing, but really getting after it, like that says a lot. And that's how you prepare early for your championship run.
Who do you think would be the best basketball player on this football team?
Well, I mean, you know who says they're pretty good. So, I mean, I always said receivers and the skill position players always have the best. Josh claimed he played. I know Josh played. And then Colvin played, and who else? There's a few guys.
Could Ron beat them all?
Hey, let me tell you something. I told those guys earlier, I said, Ron, in his day, was something else. I was happy to have him on our team. I mean, this guy was Mr. Everything in both sports, and then actually was able to back it up. Like, that's tough to do. So, but I'll say probably Keon for what I've seen. But I'm not gonna say Ron Curry couldn't do it.
Some of your other limited partners have had great success in the non-sports world in their businesses. What kind of resource can they be for you as you try and grow?
Oh man, I'm a sponge. Like these people are successful in their own world. Like I said, I've always believed in just. So my mother, coming, you know, is an educator and has been a teacher all her life. The one thing that that sounds wrong. I say the one thing she taught me because that's not the truth. The one thing that sticks to me all the time is learn a little bit about a lot of things. And that I just always believed in that. She's like, don't be one dimensional. Don't just be a athlete, all of these things. And as I've taken steps of doing that, I've learned so much and been able to be in different situations or put in different situations. So, I'm already, like I've, with Tom, we've had conversations already just about his business and how to go about things, how to operate. Like it's been fun, and this is like the beginning. So I told him, anytime you're talking, I'm listening. You know, that's just kind of how I am.
What do you think about being on this side of the mic next year?
I mean, luckily I love it. Like I do like a lot of it with TNT now, and this is a great opportunity. What NBC is doing, I mean, they're bringing in some heavy hitters. So it's fun. It'll be fun to kind of work with Mike, and to really see him in this light, because we've never really had that chance to see Mike like kind of talk about the game and really share in documentaries and interviews and sit down. But like now we get to do that, and Mello and Reggie. I mean, it's a group of guys that I really respect, and I've worked with obviously right now at Turner. I worked with Jamal before, so I love this side. I really do. I love talking about the game. I love explaining the game and giving people a different perspective of the sport, whether you know it's on or off the court, you know, because of how we think. Because I've been through it for 20 something years.
That is Vince Carter meeting with the media when he was out at Bills practice throughout OTAs and minicamp. By the way, the Ron he was talking about playing basketball, Ronald Curry, obviously a two-sport star at North Carolina throughout high school and then into North Carolina. He is the Bills quarterbacks coach. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come right back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, good show today. Thanks a lot to Brian Koziol and Paul Hamilton and you for listening. Tomorrow, I am planning on reversing a little bit of roles here. Bulldog, Chris Bulldog Parker, I think he's going to join me tomorrow for a segment on the Extra Point Show. I'm going to ask him for his opinions on everything. They usually get my opinions and thoughts on what's going on with the Bills. How about his opinions on the Sabres, the Bills, and everything else? In the meantime, Sabres Live up next, One Bills Live, then show up with the Bulldog at 3 here on WGR. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.